KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
San Mateo.
San Francisco, Mission Dolores Park.
Financial district near the Tenderloin.
Coming up, we'll get a rundown on the environmental bills sitting on Governor Brown's desk and the ones that didn't make it there.
There are quite a few bills that deal with climate change, water quality, energy storage, labeling of chemicals.
Then we get to know our homeless neighbors in San Francisco, profiled in the project Stories Behind the Fog.
It's not that we always want a dollar or two to go get a small nip of alcohol or to do drugs. Sometimes it's just a hello.
And we'll hear the story of a man who overcame homelessness and has some thoughts about the best ways to solve the problem.
You're spending millions of dollars and you still haven't gotten them off the street?
Stay tuned. Cross Currents is next. From switching to renewable energy, to battery storage, to taxing drinking water, out of the hundreds of bills that the California Assembly debated in the final hours of the legislative session this month, many dealt with climate change and the environment. I'm joined by KALW's energy and environment reporter Angela Johnston to talk about the environmental legislation now sitting on Governor Brown's desk and the ideas that did not make it there. So, Angela, tell us about the range of environmental bills that made it through the most recent session. What passed?
So it was a pretty productive year in general for the California legislature. Democrats hold super majorities in both houses of the legislature. So there were thousands of bills that were debated, and now there are about 700 that passed and ended up on Governor Brown's desk. So as a result, there are quite a few bills that deal with climate change, water quality, energy storage, labeling of chemicals. It's a lot to keep track of, but I wanted to focus on the ones that are the most interesting and the ones that are awaiting the governor's signature in the next 2 weeks.
That's a lot. Which ones do you have your eye on?
Let's start with water, because we did just get out of an extreme drought last year. So with that in mind, the Senate voted on SB 5. And when I say SB, I mean Senate bill, and I'll say AB too, and that means Assembly bill.
Okay.
So SB 5 is a bond that would allocate $4 billion to parks and water districts. And that would go from everything from building parks in disadvantaged neighborhoods to helping fund drought preparedness projects like water recycling and cleaning up groundwater pollution. It would also go to levee upgrades in the Delta, which are important because of flooding risk. And there's been flooding everywhere, but especially in the Delta, it's a big risk there. It also ends up being important for water flow into the Bay. It's also the first parks and water bond the state's seen in over a decade, but it'll still be subject to a vote on next year's June statewide ballot.
Okay, so what else? What else are you looking at?
Well, there's AB 262, which is known as the Buy Clean California Act. That was introduced by an assembly member from Oakland, Rob Bonta. Basically, it would ask builders employed by the state to consider the global warming potential of the materials they use for new construction. So that means asphalt, cement, steel, glass, projects like hospitals, universities, and roads.
Isn't that stuff, though, included in an environmental impact report that they already do?
Well, this gets even more specific than an EIR, environmental impact report. So this focuses on the climate change potential, they call it, of the actual cement that goes into the road. And we'd probably have an environmental impact report for the road and the road's effect on the environment, but this would be how environmentally friendly, how climate change friendly is that cement that goes into that road. So it gets down to the very specifics. So companies bidding on state contracts, they'd be required to report this greenhouse gas emission potential created by manufacturing and transporting these building supplies to the construction site. There's also something called SB 50, and that is a bill that has the goal of protecting public lands by giving the state the right to acquire any public land put up for sale or transfer by the federal government. So this is called first right of refusal, and it means that the state gets first dibs on any federal land up for sale by the government.
Okay.
Okay, and one more, AB 746, and that would require community water authorities to test for lead in water systems in schools, built before 2010. So I think that would be a lot of schools built before 2010. And it's relevant for the Bay Area because lead was just found at McClyman's High School in Oakland.
Right. So what about the ones that did not pass?
Right. So there were a few big environmental bills that didn't get put to a vote before the September 15th deadline. And that means they're essentially stalled for a year. Mm-hmm. So they won't go anywhere until they're reintroduced in the next legislative session. One was a bill that would have taxed drinking water to help small water systems deliver clean water to small, usually rural communities, like some small towns in the Central Valley. And there are actually some in the Bay Area that have had arsenic or nitrates in their water for years. Mm-hmm. But that bill was pushed over until the next legislative session. There's some debate. Environmentalists really liked it, but water agencies were wary because they say water is a human right and a human right shouldn't be taxed. So that one will be interesting to pay attention to see what happens.
Okay, what else? Year. What else didn't pass?
What else? Another big one that didn't make it, and this one a lot of people were paying attention to, it's called SB 100. And it's appropriately named because it would have required California get its energy from 100% renewable sources by 2045.
100% renewable. Is that possible?
It is possible, but it's really tough now because solar and wind aren't constant sources of energy. The big challenge is that the sun sets at night and sometimes the wind doesn't blow, right? Mm. And that's maybe one of the reasons why it didn't make it through. It's really important to find ways to capture these renewable sources of energy. And California doesn't really have a grid set up that will store sun power or store wind power when the sun isn't shining or the wind isn't blowing. So for a state as big as California, it was a pretty big reach. And there's already existing climate goals in place. One is that we should be going to 50% renewable by 2030. Also, energy companies were worried about the effects on jobs, and the bill didn't have the full support of Governor Brown either.
Mm. So when does Governor Brown need to make his decisions about these?
Pretty soon. He has less than 2 weeks, and he can either sign or veto these bills.
Okay. Thank you, Angela.
Thank you.
That's KELW's environment reporter, Angela Johnston. If you have a story you'd like to see her report, send her an email at environment@kelw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. San Francisco officials are launching an ambitious plan to reduce homelessness in the city. In a conversation with the San Francisco Chronicle, the head of the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing, Jeff Kosicki, said the goal is to eliminate family homelessness, clear all group tent encampments, and cut the number of continually homeless residents by half. The program is called the Homelessness Response System, and it officially starts in January. According to the latest count, nearly 7,500 people live without homes in San Francisco, and they're often classified as one big group. Well, a multimedia art project called Stories Behind the Fog is looking to change that. It's recording the stories of 100 people living in the Bay Area without a home through their voices and their images. And it's the creative work of Fran Guijarro and Dia Guha. Dia joined me in studio, and I asked her how she got the idea to go into the streets and ask homeless people about their lives.
So it started with a documentary called Moses, which is about a homeless gentleman who was on the streets for 20 years. So we thought, okay, we make a great movie, and then what happens? Audience feels empathy, but they walk away, right? Mm-hmm. So we wanted to create a platform where we'll show not just Moses' story, like 100 more, to engage the audience, to give them a perspective of why you see people on the streets, because not always like, hey, I want to be a bum and I don't care about anybody. But there's so many reasons, right? So we thought, okay, that's one aspect of engaging your audience after they watch the movie. Mm-hmm. And second is because this will be a platform to connect artists. It could be a photographer, a painter who will come to storiesbehindthefog.com, read any of the stories, be inspired, and will facilitate a connection.
Mm-hmm.
So to sum it up, it's basically, it's a call to artists to get involved in a discussion that's often held by media, our advocates, our policymakers. It's our chance, our scope to engage in an issue creatively.
So tell me more about Moses and his story.
So Moses was a very good musician back in the days, and life happened, addiction, domestic troubles, and his kid and his wife left him overnight.
Mm.
And that's when he hit rock bottom. He said, I give up. But he was a common figure on Montgomery and Jesse outside Starbucks. So he calls it his office. So how Fran also met him, and I coincidentally met him, it was serendipity in 2011 when I moved here from India to go to school. So I was sitting, I was just waiting with friends outside Starbucks, and I see this homeless man, looks decent, doesn't have a sign or anything, but people are lining up to talk to him. And I talked to Moses, and me and him exchanged a sandwich, and we talked about Grateful Dead and music, and he was curious why an Indian girl knows about Grateful Dead. Like, it's so absurd. And yeah, that's how then I contacted Fran, and I said, like, hey, I'll do anything. I'll fetch coffee and whatever, give me a chance. And since then, I've been involved with the project, and it became more than a project for the last 5 years, because Moses kind of has become my family. Being an immigrant here, I don't, I don't have too many friends, but I found like a core, a connection with Moses, and vice versa.
So this has turned into a full-fledged project. You are gathering so many stories from so many people who are homeless. Tell me some of the other people that you've met that you feature on your website, storiesbehindthefog.com.
So many. I have collected like 91 stories now since last 1 year.
Mm.
So what we do is we try and cover all range and spectrums of homelessness. So I met this really amazing woman from prenatal homeless. Her name is Mia, and she's pregnant right now. She suffered, her ex-boyfriend stabbed her. She suffered through a lot of addiction, neglect. Inspiring story. She's gone back to school. She's studying. She has PTSD, so she's studying psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And she's striving. You know, she doesn't have a hotel yet, like a proper housing. So she's kind of in shelters, but every day she goes to school. Like, that's what keeps her motivated. And prenatal homelessness is helping her with her pregnancy, and so that she's not on the streets. So I feel very proud to meet such empowering women who are not ashamed to talk about their addiction. Yes, things, went south for me, but this is where I'm at.
And that brings me to this question. How open have people been to talking to you? Has it been a struggle to get people to open up, or do people want to talk?
Actually, I would say 98% of the time people want to talk.
Really?
And 'cause my process is through the nonprofits. I partner with them, and they help you identify the people.
So
right?
You don't just walk up to people on the street.
I have done that many times. I've been chased down the street. I'm not kidding you. Like, I was chased down 2 blocks. This woman was completely, she had mental health issues, which was pretty obvious. But the idea is to keep going back. And when I do my training was completely self-taught. I started talking to people on the street. The first thing I realized is a hello. Mm-hmm. And make eye contact, because more than I'm scared of them, they are wary of me. Like, what are my intentions?
Especially if you have, do you have a microphone at that point?
No, my thing is it's very conversational. I use my iPhone.
Okay.
And I just reach out and I say, hey,
iPhone
I just.
Voice memo?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Works great.
It does.
And I say, hey, I just want to have a chat, and this is my project. I want to know, who are you? You know, not just about homelessness, like, who is Eddie, for example, right? So I normally like find a quiet place, and most of the time they're very willing.
Mm.
They're very willing because nobody really says, hey, I want to have a conversation with you. This is something that Moses has taught me, because I asked Moses, like, what do you think is the problem? Like, what can solve, the basics forget about housing, forget about money and all that stuff. And he said, communication.
Mm. Talk to us.
Talk to us. Mm. Like, acknowledge that we exist. Because it's not that we always want a dollar or two to go get a small nip of alcohol or to do drugs. Sometimes it's just a hello. And that works magic.
That's powerful. So what do you want your project to do? What's the goal here?
Engage people like me and you and more people like me. Hannah, I came from India. I grew up seeing poverty. I had 5 maids in my house when I was growing up, right? So I was completely immune. But when I came here, when I was, you know, the tech capital of the world, and I saw so many people on the streets, that's when I connected. And I'm like, what is happening? India, I understand. We have reasons. Infrastructure, corruption, everything is an issue in India. But San Francisco, it shouldn't be an issue. It shouldn't be an issue to get 7,000 people off the streets. I refuse to believe that. So I really hope what I want to do is change the attitude of people. People daily, day-to-day people. When they see somebody on the street, just change your attitude to say like, oh, I'm going to cross the road and avoid that person. If more people get involved, like individual help, it takes a village, right, to change something. If every individual kind of starts showing a little bit of kindness and empathy, you know, bringing somebody even a cup of coffee. I'm not saying bring that person to your home like we did with Moses. I'm not saying do a 10 years of film on a homeless person. Just have a little bit of empathy and kindness, because one thing I learned, it could happen to anybody at any moment.
That's Dia Guha, creative lead of the multimedia project Stories Behind the Fog. Next week, there's a TEDx talk in San Francisco featuring Moses Carbons, the man who inspired the project. You can learn more at KALW.org. Click Crosscurrents. Now, let's hear one of those stories behind the fog, recorded by Dia and her team. Nieves Moreno grew up in Chicago and was homeless from 1969 to 1989. He shared his story with Ariana Vanderplas and Maria Mutsas.
I grew up in Chicago Heights. We were that poor, you know.
Yeah.
My father passed away when I was 10 years old. He got hit by a car, you know, and he passed away in 1966. And my mother was diagnosed with cancer in 67, and in 68 they operated on her. And she lived 6 years after the operation. She still lived 6 years. But in pain, in constant pain, she constantly would ask me to, you know, Nieves, kill me, put me out of my misery. And I'm seeing her suffer, and she told me that, you know, by the time I was 12 years old, I started drinking. You know, I was young. I mean, I didn't know what to do, you know. I just didn't know what to do, you know. And my way of dealing with this was drinking and just get drunk, you know, and just, you know, stay drunk. That's the way I dealt with it. I had a lot of good jobs, you know, that I got. I got the jobs, you know, but I couldn't keep them. 3 months later, I'd be back in the streets, you know, because I couldn't, you know, I was an alcoholic. I couldn't keep a job in place, and if I didn't like it and I didn't want to stay there, then I'd move on to somewhere else. And that's how I didn't spend my life, moving around everywhere, drinking, you know. When I got here in San Francisco, I got here homeless with nothing, drinking, and I drank until I met my ex in 89. We got together, went and played a game of pool, drank a couple of beers.
Wow.
And we got together, and from that moment on, we stayed together from 89 to 95, made 2 kids. And I changed my life around, you know, because I quit drinking.
Yeah.
But then later on, I think 3 years before we separated, she was already a drug addict.
What kind of drugs?
She used to use coke. Oh, you know, she used to shoot up coke. And 3 years before we broke up, she got back into it. And I didn't know she was doing it behind my back.
Mm.
When I finally found out, instead of trying to stop her or helping her, I ended up joining her doing drugs. We were in a path of destruction. Mm. And unless we stopped, and, you know, put a stop to it and all that. And I knew, I said, the kids are going to be taken away. So we, you know, we said, well, we have to separate because we're not doing, you know, it's we're the problem, you know. So we separated. She moved to Florida and I moved on, you know, just went bumming around again, you know, like I used to. I went back into my alcohol again. I started drinking.
How, why? Because that's that was your habit? Or
that was my habit, yeah. That was my habit with alcohol, you know. That was my drug of choice, with alcohol. In the year 2000, I had been drinking for a week in a blackout, and a friend gave me four pills of 100 milligrams of morphine, and I took all four of them. And I had a big old stroke, you know, and I almost died. I was in a coma for 25 days. After I came out of the stroke and all that, you know, I still drank beer, but it wasn't like before, you know. I just started not liking it anymore. You know? It just didn't sit right with me no more, you know. So I slowly started, you know, putting it down, you know. Now, from the time that I quit and I stopped doing drugs and alcohol and everything to now, to this point right now, my life has changed and for the better, you know. And yeah. And I've been doing pretty well, you know, ever since, you know. I'm not homeless, you know, right now, you know. I'm on SSI. I get SSI. I only get $982 a month. So I work, you know, I do things, you know, I keep myself busy. Now my goal is helping people, you know. That's my way of paying back, you know, helping the community, you know, because I have ideas in my head and how to get the homeless off the street. For instance, I have an idea that I want to do. I would like to have a talk show for homeless people and everybody can come in there and express their feelings, express what do you want to say to the president, you know. Tell the president whatever you want to say to the president, express and tell the president what you feel and what you need, what you want, you know. And that's how you get ideas, you know. What that's an idea I've had, you know.
I really like that.
It's an idea how to communicate with the homeless.
Yeah.
Okay, to find out what they need. There's people out there in the streets that need help.
Yeah.
I know they're spending millions of dollars to have the homeless the way they are.
Yeah.
They're spending millions of dollars and you still haven't gotten them off the street or made an effort to get them off the street. Oh, we're building affordable housing. For who? We are not getting, we make $1,000 a month. That's not affordable housing. They say affordable housing to the people that are making $100,000 or $50,000 enough, because the rent is $2,000, $2,500 at the least and up for the people that are getting affordable housing. All these, every time they build a building, affordable housing, affordable for who?
Yeah.
Who are you talking about affordable housing? The people that need it are not getting it. We, the people that make only $1,000, I want a house with a kitchen, a bathroom inside.
Yeah.
I want a house to live like a home. I don't want a SRO where I have to live with drug addicts and the hall down and the bathroom down the hall where everybody all over, excuse my language, they get the bathroom all dirty, you know? The showers are all nasty because they don't have people cleaning up after that, you know.
No.
I mean, they do, but they don't, you know. Give me a break. That's not the way you do things, okay? That's not the way to do them, and they know it.
No.
It's a system that's not working. Let's change the system and do something different.
Nieves' story was produced by KALW's Jeremy Ju. It's an excerpt from Stories Behind the Fog, Humanizing Homelessness in San Francisco, One Story at a Time. We'll be airing them all week. And you can find Nieves' oral history and photography from the project at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. And that's Cross Currents for today. Our team includes Raquel Maria Dillon, Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Christine Nguyen, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Stephen Short, Jackie Sajiko, Lilia Vega, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are James Rollins and Gabe Graben. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Our news director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by Sierra Ensemble. Sierra Ensemble plays a free concert at the Presidio Officers Club, that's in San Francisco, on Friday. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.